The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we'll dig a little deeper into the December issue of Our State magazine, featuring articles inspired by familiar Christmas carols, the first of which for today is Go Tell It on the Mountain. A room filled with gingerbread creation builds hope and literacy in Wilkes County. Yellow and blue stepping stones lead to a cozy cottage with a three-story windmill. A bright red bow adorns the front door while rainbow shingles shimmer on the rooftop. To the left of the property, ducks rest peacefully on a pond, and in the front yard, a snowman greets visitors. This sweet dwelling looks good enough to eat. And, well, that's possible. I don't know if I'd want to eat it, but it is edible, Kathy Webster says, looking down at the gingerbread house she built with her neighbor, Donna Spartak. Their creation won first place in the amateur division at the 2024 Wilkes Literacy Gingerbread House Festival. Even though most of the house is gingerbread, the ladies found inspiration in a ceramic windmill at an antiques shop and worked from a cardboard model to create a parchment template. They crafted the base of the property, the snowman, the ducks, trees, and a bridge, mostly from fondant, and they used peppermint sticks as fencing. Ribbons of rainbows, also known as airhead extremes, served as the roofing and windmill siding. During the construction phase, the two ladies used soup and vegetable cans to hold their materials together, and then to transport their windmill house to the festival at the 915, an elegant event venue in downtown Wilkesboro. They drove 5 miles an hour along the 2.5-mile bumpy road that leads to Webster's house at about 2,000 feet of elevation. Completing and moving the project was harder than it looks, Webster says with a laugh. Nevertheless, a sense of accomplishment shines from her eyes as she and Spartak gaze at the dark blue ribbon that hangs near their windmill. Holiday cheer is on full display in downtown Wilkesboro on this first Saturday in December. Folks stake out their spots to watch the annual parade along the wreath-lined streets. There's live music, kids' activities, and the lighting of the Heritage Square Christmas tree and, of course, the Gingerbread Festival. Jean Hefner, Executive Director of Wilkes Literacy, walks around the main room of the Federal Revival-style building, pointing out the range of entries from gingerbread abodes crafted from store-bought kits to an octopus winding its way its sandy-baked tentacles around the fondant-molded shells and a treasure chest. There's even a Millennium Falcon decorated with Skittles. Initially inspired by the Omni Grove Park Inn and Spa's annual event, Hefner started the festival, the nonprofit's primary fundraiser, in 2020. In the wake of the COVID pandemic, she felt it was important that the organization, which focuses on adult literacy, have other ways to fund its mission if a grant fell through. Admission is free as the event makes most of its money from selling entries in a silent auction and sponsorships. The Health Foundation matches what they make at the festival up to $10,000. Money raised helps pay for Wilkes literacy programming, including funding their summer camps and purchasing online math programs and new books for each student. We feel like it's important for students to have a fresh set of books, Hefner says. I think that's part of preserving their dignity, helping them feel like they're really accomplishing something. When people walk in to see 60 houses built by children and amateur professional bakers, they realize that the festival goes beyond royal icing and gumdrops. A poster in the front hallway states that 1 in 7 adults in Wilkes County cannot read on a fifth grade level. When Hefner stepped into her role in 2019, she knew that about 20% of adults in Wilkes County didn't have a high school diploma. But now she knows their personal stories as well. Like the elderly gentleman who ran a successful engine repair business for years but didn't know the alphabet. Or a mom who would show her daughter's YouTube videos of a woman reading books because she couldn't read to them. Or a 19-year-old high school dropout who realized he made a short-sighted decision. Wilkes Literacy works with people who either seek out their services or are referred. An ear doctor once reached out to Hefner asking to give one of his patients some additional support. Over the last 6 years, Hefner's work with the community has taught her that the ability to read and comprehend goes beyond being able to finish a book. Literacy gives people the confidence to read a prescription label and take the proper dosage, to fill out a medical form, to follow recipes and cook healthier meals for their families. Wilkes Literacy Tutors also help strengthen students' math and numeracy skills so they can understand basic finance. Students who come to the organization usually fit into one of three categories. They need a basic education certificate, English is their second language, or they need the equivalent of a high school degree. Some students, like the high school dropout who came to Hefner and admitted, "I made a stupid choice when I dropped out," worked with a Wilkes Literacy Tutor and reached their goal in a few months. Hefner felt deep sympathy and admiration for that student. "Most adults can't say when they did something wrong," she says. Now, after passing his high school exam, he plans to enroll in college and has his sights set on pursuing a welding career. A handful of students are more of what Hefner describes as a slow crawl and work with the organization for a few years before they reach their goals. While Hefner wishes she could say that all the 25 to 30 students the nonprofit serves in a year achieve their individual objectives, sometimes they come in and they just leave, she says. Sometimes when a person who has never really had anything good happen gets to where something really good is happening, it's almost like they self-sabotage because they don't know how to handle it. Luckily, Wilkes Literacy's dedicated volunteers also act as dedicated cheerleaders, providing students with consistent encouragement and accountability. That support is often what helps students cross the finish line. Ruth Paredes' high school career ended prematurely when she became a mom to a baby girl and then a boy later in Los Angeles. As a single parent, she felt overwhelmed by the prospect of raising kids and finishing her education. She moved to Wilkesboro 10 years ago, hoping to give her children a slower pace of life. She kept telling herself that she'd get her GED. "I just kept saying at some point," she says. When the residential coordinator at the local housing authority learned of Paredes' ambition, she connected her to Wilkes Literacy. Paredes met with tutors twice a week for nearly 2 years. She attributes her progress to the weekly check-in texts from her tutors and their willingness to work at Paredes's pace. "Jean and everybody else rallied for me," she said. Paredes's goal was to, God willing, graduate high school the same time as her son in May of 2026. She crossed the finish line in June, almost a full year ahead of schedule. Soon after Paredes passed her exams and earned her high school equivalency, a team of five Wilkes Literacy Tutors, all who had a hand in helping her, gathered to celebrate at a community center in Paredes' neighborhood. They joined Paredes' husband, children, and extended family to cut cake and shower her with gifts. She just needed people to walk alongside her and show her she could do it, Hefner says. And in wasting no time, Paredes met with a career coach at the community college after a celebration to discuss her future education goals. Hefner is certain that Paredes is college ready. As the festival draws to a close, Hefner stands at the front of the room, smiling at the scene playing out before her. A boy sporting a Santa hat excitedly points out a baked home with a lawn sculpted from Rice Krispies. Women dressed in colorful winter sweaters take pictures of a train station supported by pillars of peppermint. The festival is a big undertaking, but Hefner finds satisfaction in knowing that when one of her students graduates, their success started right here in a room filled with gingerbread. And the Gingerbread Festival takes place in Wilkesboro. It's too late for this year. It was last weekend. But if you want to check it out, you could the pictures, you could look at wilkesliteracy.org/gingerbread. Our next article is entitled Away in a Manger. In a Chatham County barn filled with music and light, a choir director's Christmas concert becomes a love song to the mother who helped him develop his gift. With thousands of tiny twinkling lights casting a warm golden glow on the faces of the singers in front of him, Matt Fry raises his arms. He turns and cues pianist Daniel Steinert, who begins playing Hoodie Fanfare brightly in 10-8 time. After four bars, the sopranos join the piano, their voices soaring into the rafters. Next come the altos, then the tenors. Finally, the deep, resonant rumble of the basses joins the harmony in a round of Gloria, Gloria. As the joyous song progresses, the entire chorus sings in unison, Hodie Christus Natus Est. Today, Christ is born. Tonight is the first of two Christmas concerts that the Farrington Village Singers perform each year at the Farrington Barn. Matt has been the group's music director for nearly 2 years. Always near the front at many of his concerts sits his mom. She's 87, and she copes with a joint disease known as osteoarthritis that causes pain and stiffness in her neck. She attends often, and when she does, she remembers. She helped Matt find joy in music. Today, Matt helps her find joy in life. Shirley knew Matt would be musical early on, and she was determined to help him develop his talent. She watched him dance down the hallway of their family home in Missouri while humming the Star Spangled Banner. That same year, he climbed onto the bench of the family's new piano and picked out Jingle Bells. The piano was meant for his brother, Tim, who was 4 years older, but Matt, who had no experience playing a musical instrument, was drawn to it. He was only three. This kid's got quite an ear, Shirley thought. Shirley, who had experience with piano herself, wanted her younger son to tap into his natural talent. So when he was seven, she signed him up for piano lessons. When she realized that he wasn't learning to read music but simply playing by ear, she took him to a different teacher who would make him play from sheet music. Shirley made Matt practice every day, and when friends came by to ask if he could come out to ride bikes, if he hadn't finished practicing, she wouldn't let him go. Matt went on to play trumpet in his high school band, but his mother, who had performed in musical theater, really wanted him to sing. Mom almost literally dragged me up to the school to sing for the high school chorus teacher, he says. And the teacher threw her arms around me and gave me a big hug and said, thank God, I need a bass. Shirley's diligence paid off. Matt graduated from Missouri Western State University with a degree in education with vocal music emphasis. He taught chorus for 12 years in Missouri before moving to North Carolina in 2000 for his then wife's career. At Jordan Matthews High School in Siler City, Matt taught chorus and theater until his retirement in 2021. During that time, he taught a bunch of good kids, as he calls it. He explains that most of his students had a good work ethic. They showed up, they listened, and they helped classmates who were struggling to master a skill. When you see a kid being nice to another kid, when you see somebody helping somebody else, when you have that perfect moment that the music is exactly like it's supposed to be, it is euphoric, Matt says. It's almost overwhelming to know that they did that or that you did all that together. Today, former students often come up to Matt when they see him around town. I've never had any grown-up come up to me who used to be a kid of mine without a smile on their face and saying, hey, Mr. Fry, you remember me? He says, it's a good feeling. He's been able to keep in touch with many of his former pupils through social media. One gave him a card to thank him. When she started taking chorus, she was very shy. By the time she graduated, she'd gained a lot more confidence. She credited Matt with bringing her out of her shell. That's really cool, he says. In addition to teaching, Matt sang with the Vocal Arts Ensemble of Durham and the Duke Chapel Choir. Dr. Rodney Wincope, the director of choral music at Duke University, invited Matt to join the Triangle Choral Exchange after his first year of teaching at Jordan Matthews. He traveled with the group to South Africa and Namibia, where they performed with choruses from those two countries and visited Robben Island, where they sang in a common area of the prison that once held Nelson Mandela. That was really powerful, Matt says. When you're standing there near that jail cell and looking around and thinking that Mandela did this for almost 30 years, If he survived that, it just makes you think that your problems aren't quite as bad as you thought they were, and that you can probably get through it, whatever it is. Matt brought home a flat black stone from the beach on the island, and whenever he's going through a tough time or when things seem overwhelming, he picks up that rock, rubs his fingers over it, and thinks, "I can do this." Matt knew his mom would need that kind of encouragement for what he was about to ask her to do. Matt worried about his mom. She was in good health, but she was getting older. She had no close family left in Missouri, and by 2009, she'd moved out of Matt's childhood home. Shirley was a social butterfly, and with his concern about her living alone, Matt gave her a call. "Why don't you just come out here?" he asked. "Oh, I'll just ruin your life," she responded. "No, you won't," he assured her. Shirley packed up her small apartment and moved 1,000 miles away from everything she had ever known to come to a state she hadn't visited since childhood, where she didn't know anybody besides her son. With such a daunting move, she wondered how she would be accepted in North Carolina. But the move excited her, and her son was there to help. Matt discovered a bridge club for her to join, and the members welcomed her immediately. With her outgoing personality, Shirley made friends easily, and she fell in love right away with the people and the environment. "I told Matt I felt like I was living in a state park when I came out here," she says. "Everything was so beautiful, and something's always blooming in North Carolina." Now at 87, Shirley has a lot of spunk, and she knows she hasn't ruined her son's life. "But I'm trying," she jokes. She does, though, have trouble getting around. A few years ago, while rehearsing in Durham, Matt felt his phone vibrate in his pocket. It was his mom. She had fallen at home. She was able to get herself off the floor, but she was bleeding. Matt rushed out of rehearsal, and on the hour-long drive home, thoughts ran through his head. "Will she be in the ER? Will I be able to continue leaving her at home by herself? Is my singing career over?" When he walked in the door, he found her in the company of their neighbors. She was shaken up, but she was fine. Matt was not. He had a decision to make. He weighed the musical satisfaction of singing with the Vocal Arts Ensemble of Durham in the Duke Chapel Choir against the anxiety of worrying constantly about his mom while he was an hour away. "Wouldn't I feel rotten if something happened and I'm at rehearsal?" he asked himself. He knew what he had to do. Give up performing with the two choral groups. Today, Matt cares for his mom by helping her remember to take her medications, and he drives her wherever she needs to go somewhere. Wherever they go, she holds on to him for support, either clutching his arm or holding his hand. She feels safe knowing that her son is there to support her. Sometimes when Matt schedules a rehearsal for the Farrington Village Singers, Shirley comes along, especially if there's going to be a social gathering afterward. Following the rehearsal, she gives honest critiques. Matt doesn't mind that at all. At the Farrington Village Singers' Christmas concert, Shirley sits up near the front. An upbeat song makes her smile. A heartfelt song makes her cry. The whole time she watches her son direct, and as she remembers hearing him play Jingle Bells on the family's new piano nearly 60 years ago, she thinks of what music has brought them both. Joy. Shirley's osteoarthritis keeps her in pain, but when she hears the jubilant music that her son's chorus creates, her discomfort disappears. It happens at every concert, and every time she thinks, "Now isn't that funny?" For more information on this year's Christmas concerts, visit FarringtonVillageSingers.org, and Farrington is spelled F-E-A-R-R-I-N-G. T-O-N, FarringtonVillageSingers.org. Next up is Deck the Halls. Across North Carolina, familiar landmarks shine a bit brighter when they slip into their holiday finery. So, for years, this is about the Ocracoke Lighthouse portion of this. For many years, the late John Simpson placed the wreath at the top of the island's lighthouse, a merry tribute to his grandfather and the second-to-last keeper of the light. Next is the Old Salem Heritage Bridge in Winston-Salem. At Christmas time, the rafters of this 120-foot pedestrian bridge are spangled with Moravian stars, symbols of the Star of Bethlehem, which lights the way between the past and the present. It's located on Old Salem Road. And this is a covered bridge, so it's appears to be, at this point, it's a pedestrian bridge, wooden and crossing the river there. The photo shows the bridge with a peaked roof and then greenery strung around it. The rafters you can see in the long shot of the picture out to the other side, and with all the Moravian stars hanging down. And there's water in the foreground, and it's a reflection of the ceiling of the covered bridge. Quite interesting. And the Ocracoke Lighthouse, of course, is all white. And it's one of the, it's the shortest lighthouse in the state of North Carolina. It's all white, and it has the live oaks in front of it that are weathered by the wind and shaped by the wind, with the light, the wreath at the very top. Next up is Lucky Strike Water Tower in Durham. For nearly 100 years, workers gathered here to manufacture cigarette brands like Lucky Strike. Today, this emblem towers over the heart of a different, more festive kind of gathering place in the American Tobacco Campus. And this year, the American Tobacco Campus will celebrate its 21st annual tower lighting, and that was on December 3rd. Next is the Swain County Visitor Center and Heritage Museum in Bryson City. Throughout December, revelers can head into the town's visitor center to write letters to Santa and drop them into the North Pole mailbox, then pick up hot cocoa and Christmas cookies to enjoy on the picture-perfect front lawn. You can find out more information at explorebrysoncity.com/events/Christmas-holiday. And the Heritage Museum has a cupola at the top of it with a clock, and there's a tall porch, if you will, portico, and with four Doric columns. They're wrapped and festooned with garland. There's lighted wreaths. There's lighted trees in the foreground, the yard of the building, and it's formerly was the county courthouse, and it's now a museum with exhibits on local history, including the creation of Great Smoky Mountains National Park and Fontana Dam. There's a large tree on the right side, I'm sure, there's a tree lighting every year. Some of the other trees actually are wrapped in lights, and there's a snippet you can see of a sleigh that I'm assuming is a photo opportunity for folks. Next up is the Village Park Carousel in Kannapolis. This double-decker carousel features 1,800 glowing bulbs, and during the city's celebration of lights, sees the entire park turned into a sparkling spectacle nightly through December. You might even catch Santa taking a spin. For information, you can look up their website at kannapolisnc.gov/Christmas. Then there's Truist Field in Charlotte. It will be a bit longer before the Charlotte Knights play their first game of the season. In the meantime, head to the Light and Knights Festival to go for a spin on an ice skating rink or zip down a 150-foot-long snow tubing hill in the outfield. Uptown serves as a shining backdrop as you lace up your skates, sip hot cocoa, see thousands of lights, and shop for gifts at a vendor market during the Light the Knights Festival. It's held November 26th through January 4th. And the picture that's shown is at sunset. You can see the sun is sinking into the horizon. You have the backdrop around the rink of the buildings in Charlotte, in Uptown Charlotte. Then there's the Downtown Raleigh Tree. This year, after the mayor flips the switch and officially ushers in the holiday season at the annual Downtown Raleigh Tree Lighting Festival, and that was back on November 21st, the giant evergreen will illuminate historic Moore Square, a gathering place since 1792. It'll be there each night of December. And that's located, the website is downtownraleigh.org/D-RA-programs/tree-lighting. the Grove Arcade in Asheville. During the holidays, strings of lights draw shoppers' gazes upward to admire the unique architectural elements of this historic enclosed mall, which opened in 1929. When self-made millionaire and tasteless chill tonic inventor E.W. Grove dreamt of the most elegant building in America, the Grove Arcade was born. For more information about the arcade, which is located at 1 Page Avenue in Asheville, check out grovearcade.com. And then we'll continue on, and this is Deck the Hulls. A little twist on words there. Ahoy, Santa. These 10 coastal flotillas transform North Carolina waterways into shimmering winter wonderlands. Star of Wonder. Fireworks cap off the North Carolina Holiday Flotilla at Wrightsville Beach. And there's the picture here is of a boat, like about the size of a party boat, with the theme is Toy Story, and that's on the side of the boat. And then they've got the characters from Toy Story, the pig, and I see Woody, and the horse, and Buzz Lightyear. And the boat itself is festooned with lights up on all its rigging. And in the background, there's two bursting fireworks in the dark sky. From the deck at Jack's Waterfront Bar, spectators wave to the boats passing by during the Crystal Coast Christmas flotilla. That was actually last weekend, but plan for next year if you want. It's in Morehead City in Beaufort. From kayaks to yachts, boats of every size will glimmer as they travel from the Morehead City waterfront to the Beaufort waterfront. An awards party at the Beaufort Hotel follows the 33rd annual event. For more information, check out ourstate.com/crystalcoast-flotilla. And there are a few other places that have events. There's the Swansboro Christmas Flotilla. All these are actually in November. There's nothing in the future, but just for future reference, there's one in Swansboro. There's at Wrightsville Beach. There's Ocean Isle Beach, Carolina Beach, in Bath, and in New Bern. And most all of those are either the last weekend in November or the first weekend in December if you want to plan for that for next year. There's a holiday flotilla in Manteo, which is actually on December 13th. As you watch this cheerful boat parade from the downtown Manteo waterfront, catch a beautiful view of the Elizabeth II, a representational 16th century merchant ship anchored at the edge of Roanoke Island. Anchored at the edge of Roanoke Island Festival Park as she lights up Shallow Bag Bay. And for more information on that, perhaps for next year, is ourstate.com/Roanoke Island-flotilla. There's also a flotilla in Surf City and one in Southport as well. The Trianu Arts and Culture has created light displays for more than a decade. While there's always a large structure on the lake, most creations rotate from year to year. Glowing green frogs and giant dragonflies were a hit in 2024. And these are the silk sculptures. They're iron covered in silk and lit up from within. The content of this program is intended for those who are blind and print impaired. Well, so we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974, and can be reached at 919-831-1973. This broadcast is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org.